All right, we ready to go, Reg? I am. Let's get the microphone all set up here. Are you ready to go? All right, looks good. I'm in a good mood today. Hopefully that translates into a good podcast. What do you say? Clear my instrument. Ready? Here we go. I'll give you the countdown. I'll give you no three S's. I'll give you the countdown. I'll give you the music of your podcast. What do you say? Episode 321. 321. Blast off. How's that? All right. You ready? Here we go. Star, smile strong. 321. Now, 321 is not only the countdown, but it's also the number of the podcast today. Wow. How about that for symmetry? Deep, man. All right. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there, naturally. If you like what you hear, don't forget. Spread the word. Tell others. Send a link. Send a message to friends, family, or anybody that you know that listens to podcasts and tell them, what the heck is your problem? If I got a podcast for you, and then you tell them it's Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, your loyalty and devotion, of course, is always, always much appreciated. And if you like what you hear, again, for the second time, lots of things to do if you like what you hear. If you like what you hear, go to the WGN radio.com website, hit the prompt for podcast, hit the prompt for this specific podcast, and you will find, I don't even know how to describe it, a boatload, a cargo ship full. No, don't say that, because there might be, we have a supply chain problem. No supply chain problem here. We're pumping these things and deliver them every week to you. But anyway, put it this way. There's a lot of podcasts there. So listen to them. Get up to date. Always find out what we talked about before so you'll know what we're talking about today and tomorrow. Yeah. Welcome to episode 321. 321, blast off. And boy, I tell you, I was talking a few podcasts ago. I had some throat problems, and my voice is now back to normal and feeling good. And I forgot, how dexterous, is that a word? Let me just say it this way. How much dexterity my voice has or can have at times. I don't know if you listened at the very beginning when I did the opening there. I said, a podcast. I didn't know I was going to do that, but wow, my voice was feeling very strong. And I said, let me just play with that thing. Wow. All over the place today. Many octaves, many different levels of auditory dexterity by my instrument today. So I'm enjoying that. Especially the way it sounded maybe a month ago. Oh my God. It was difficult for a few days there. A good week and a half. And then if you may remember back in February, I had some throat problems as well, a very bad sore throat, which I may or may not attribute to COVID. Still don't know. My COVID situation is still, I still put an asterisk next to it. I know I probably had it, but I really can't nail it. It was such an unorthodox kind of case, considering when I first had the symptoms, and then when I eventually first tested positive, which was like 2 weeks later, with no symptoms. I tested negative with these supposed symptoms of a sore throat, but it went away in a day and a half, and I never had any more symptoms after that. And then, you know, like 10 days later, I tested positive with no symptoms. I don't know. I'm sure I had it, but I don't know if I had it. But regardless, so I'm happy to say that my voice is back. The voice is back in town. The voice is back in town. Look up that song by Thin Lizzy. The boys are back in town. Anyway, so what I want to talk to you about today is wow, a major wake up call. It's not so much a shock to me. I've been saying this for quite a while, especially over the last couple of years when we've talked about COVID and the way the United States has handled it and allowed it to divide the country so much and become so politicized. It almost from the get-go, a health issue became a political issue, so much so that it actually influenced our presidential election. Amazing how a disease, how a health issue could have that kind of an impact. And it still is, and COVID is not gone. And as much as we want it to be gone, and as much as we're acting as if it's gone, it is not gone. And I just hope it doesn't come back with a ferocity that it came initially, it attacked us with. Thankfully, those vaccines that everybody has been downplaying are working. I'm double boosted. I'm looking forward to booster number three. Bring it on. I want any and all precautions. I trust the medical community. Call me naive, call me stupid, but I'm still around here, and the medical community has helped that quite a bit over the years. So I trust the medical community. But I've been saying how the divisiveness of our country over COVID has really sent a message around the world that we have lost a lot of our standing, because we were worse, not no better or worse, but worse, much worse than most countries in terms of vaccination numbers and the way we were handling it. We were at the bottom of the barrel, and many smaller countries, many more less powerful, underdeveloped countries were much more ahead of us in terms of the way they were handling COVID, the way they were vaccinating people. So our leadership around the world on COVID was non-existent. We were not a leader in it at all. I felt that we were embarrassing ourselves. And I actually said that if the way that we have been divided over the last decades, but COVID certainly shined a light on it. I said that, you know, if I were our enemies, I wouldn't even worry about having an army anymore. I wouldn't even worry about nuclear weapons and missiles and all that stuff. Just let us, the United States, implode on itself. They won't need to invade us. We're going to, if we stay down the road we're on now, we are going to self-destruct. It may take decades. It may take a century. But we are slowly going to decline. We already have declined. I mean, if you don't believe that, then you're really in denial, and you're waving a flag. You're clinging to a patriotism that's about 70 years old from World War II. That doesn't exist anymore, folks, if you think. And what I want to talk about to you today is firsthand observation, firsthand experience that backs up what my hypothesis of what I've been saying about our reputation around the world and the way we're viewed by other countries, by allies, ironically, not just enemies, but by our allies, the way our allies look at us. And I had a first person experience on just that. And so what I really want to talk about today is that this was an eye-opener, and we need, as a country, we need to really open up our eyes and realize that this divisiveness in our country is not only detrimental internally into our country, but it is externally bad news, detrimental in how other countries, whether they're allies or enemies, look at us. Our enemies are licking their chops, seeing how we are so divided, and we are we seem to be in utter chaos right now with so many things going on. The recent ruling on abortion, as I said, our COVID, our elections, January 6th, there's so much chaos and tumult just surrounding our country that our enemies are sitting back and licking their chops. And I talked about this a few weeks ago about playing the political long game. They're just sitting back and waiting for us to get to a point where we're going to be little lambs. And don't think it's impossible. Once again, look at history. The Roman Empire did not fall because of an invasion, did not lose a war. The Roman Empire collapsed upon itself. Always learn from history. And so, if you don't think that the Russian invasion of Ukraine, now look, there's a lot of potential motivations for that, and we've read all about this. You know, is it a last hurrah for Vladimir Putin? Is he terminally ill? Maybe is he trying to? He has only a short time left, months or years, and perhaps he's trying to make one last lunge at bringing Russia back to its former glories of the past centuries. Is it that? Is it a Putin internal motivation for this this Ukraine invasion? Is it a nationalistic, populist move to keep him in power, to establish his legacy, to make him one of the great leaders in Russian history? Whatever the motivations are, I think it's certainly a viable reason that people say, well, why now? Okay, well, maybe there's these health issues that Putin has, but once again, if you overlook the fact of the way our country has been portraying itself to the outside world, to the other countries of the world over the last several years because of our divisiveness, long before COVID and long before Donald Trump, you know, this has been going on for a while. As I said a couple of podcasts ago, and that's why I say always listen to previous podcasts, because many times I will reference them. You know, our divisiveness can go back 20 years, at the very least 20 years. After 9/11, when we were united, we were suddenly, as quickly, on an instant, we were united as a country, and it was an amazing sight to see the resiliency of America, and it may be the last time we ever see that kind of resiliency in this country, given how divided we are now. But as quick as that unity swelled almost overnight because of the horrific attack of 9/11, within a year or so, it disappeared when we were so divided over the war in Iraq. And since then, that divide has continued to grow and grow and grow on a variety of issues, to the point now where there is a huge chasm. There is a Grand Canyon of division in this country right now, between political parties and cultural and social ideas and mores. And if you don't think that other countries are looking at us and saying, well, you know, now is a good time to start to push. They may not be looking to invade us, but they've had their sights on doing other things, and they were always afraid that America would get involved and stop them. But when they see us so divided on every issue, practically, they say, you know what? Now is the time. So if you don't think that the Ukraine invasion by Russia has been influenced by our divided country right now, which was exacerbated by COVID, you're just not looking at reality. You're in denial. We have to. World War II is over, and whatever glory we had in World War II, that's done. The world is not. The world is no longer thanking us for keeping the world safe for democracy. That's over. Whatever glory and credit we got in 1945, we've used it up. And I thought that was a fairly good hypothesis and theory. But recently, as I said earlier, I saw it in action. And I was somewhat, you know, from a personal standpoint, I was saying, well, I told you so. I wasn't happy to say I told you so, but I knew what, but I could look around and see from a realistic point of view. And I've always said that at the end of the day, folks, I try to be a realist. I'm an optimistic realist. But the realism sometimes does eliminate some of the optimism, because the realities are pretty tough these days. And so I have felt that on a world stage, the United States' reputation is lessened in many respects. Actually weakened and disrespected. And when you see what Russia did, I think that's a direct correlation to that. And don't be surprised if you see other countries like North Korea get little weird. And don't, and we're having to always keep our eyes on China and Taiwan. And people say, who cares about China and Taiwan? You better care about China and Taiwan. Because Taiwan controls about 90% of the silicon chips in the world. And what runs your computer, and what runs your smartphone, and what runs a majority of the technology in this world are silicon chips. Your car, everything, almost everything you touch that you rely on a daily basis is built upon a silicon chip, and whoever controls that market will control the world economy. And right now, thankfully, Taiwan is a democracy, and we are their allies. But for decades, China has wanted to reclaim Taiwan, just as Russia feel some kind of reclamation and right to reclaim Ukraine. These things are not random acts. And you better be worried about China. You better keep your eyes and ears open about what's going on in Taiwan. And what happens in Ukraine will affect that. Because if Russia does ultimately win this war or reclaim even parts of Ukraine for their act of war, for their act of violence, for their invasion, And the rest of the world sees that we didn't really come in and stop it, did we? We've been on the fence. We've been giving arms, but you know, the President Zelensky there certainly has not been happy with the way the United States has supported them. He's been grateful for the support, but he has also always been wanting more if he's going to hold off the Russian army. And because we are so divided in this country, President Biden has been very hesitant to get more seriously involved. We just pulled out of Afghanistan, and now we're going to go into Ukraine? We were just in Afghanistan for 20 years. And at the end of the day, the Taliban won that, as I said before in a podcast a couple weeks ago, the long game. Our enemies are playing the long game on us, folks. We better realize that. China is just waiting. But they have had Taiwan in their sights for decades. And if we continue to be as divided as we are in this country, and as we continue to portray a weakened image to the rest of the world, things are going to shift, and they're going to shift fast. And we're going to go, what happened? Whoa, what happened? How did we fall from the top here? Believe me, we are teetering right now. And I say that not only theoretically, which I think there's a basis for this, because we're seeing things happen. I said this long before the Ukraine invasion, that our enemies are going to use our weakness and our divisiveness against us and do what they want to do. And sure enough, Russia has done that, and more countries may follow. What I saw recently was very disturbing, because, as I said before, you expect that from your enemies, but you, when it's your allies, when it's your friends, boy, it stings a lot more, right? Don't you notice that in your regular life? You know, somebody that you don't respect may criticize you, and you may take that as a grain of salt, but if someone that you respect or you care about, a family member or a close friend or a respected coworker, says something about you, it stings, doesn't it? And I felt the sting of an ally recently. One of our international allies. So over the 4th of July weekend, a few weeks ago, my wife and I were out of the country. We were in England. We were in London. And London's one of my favorite, if not my favorite, cities in the world. Maybe even more than Chicago, where I've lived my whole life. And I would love to live in London one day, even for a couple of months. I would just love to live in London. We went there for our wedding honeymoon, and I fell in love with that city, and I fell in love with England. And it's been an ongoing love affair for decades, and I've been there many times. So we were there over for about 6 days, and part of that time was over. Now, we didn't go there specifically for 4th of July. We didn't go there specifically to spend 4th of July in London, which it was an interesting dynamic to be in England on 4th of July. Because, you know, they lost, right? It was interesting being an American in England on 4th of July, one of our America's most beloved holidays and most important holidays, about our independence from England. And there I was in our country that was formerly owned us, if you will. And the funny thing was, there were no fireworks, as you would expect, and it wasn't a holiday. it was just a Monday. It was just another Monday. But what was interesting, my wife and I were walking through the mall right in front of Buckingham Palace as they were preparing for the changing of the guard. They do that every day. A lot of tourists around there. And before the official ceremony, as people were gathering, they had a band, like a marching band, playing. And it was very surreal to be in England as an American on 4th of July, enemy territory, right? But as we were walking through the mall, they were playing this marching band that were behind the gates of Buckingham Palace. This marching band was playing American patriot music. Sousa music. All those songs that we play on 4th of July as patriotic, you know, to stir our patriotic feelings, this band was playing. And I was like, whoa, are they doing this as some kind of an odd tribute to 4th of July? Or I don't know. You know, many of our songs have English roots to them. Many of them, our Star Spangled Banner, the melody of, I don't know if you know this, but the melody of the Star Spangled Banner, Oh Say Can You See, you know, Francis Scott Key wrote the lyrics about America, but he put those lyrics to a melody that was a very popular pub song in England, a very popular, you know, drinking song. Da 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 da. Da, da, da. Different words. If you ever hear, you know, we hear bump, ba da 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 da, you know, but a lot of those songs, you know, since we were British in our heritage, early on, we took many of the British traditions and still brought them. We made them American, but they did have British origins. God Save the Queen is, you know, that's God Save the Queen. We play that in America like it's ours, but it's not ours. So there we are in England, and I'm hearing all this Sousa music playing. So it's kind of weird, but that's not the story. So we were there, and of course, I mean, I'd love to go. We wanted to go to London a few years ago, but COVID stopped that. So it's been a long delayed trip back. We've gone there many times. A lot of times we will go there on a special anniversary, since that's where we went on our honeymoon. But of course it was delayed a few years, so we finally went back. And just by coincidence, a certain piano player who wears glasses had a couple of concerts, you know, outside of London. But that was just a coincidence. I may talk about that later in another podcast. But needless to say, we went to go see a couple of Elton John concerts in a town just outside of London called Watford, where Elton has a very close relationship. It was and still is for most of his life. Almost 50 years later, his hometown, he wasn't born in Watford, but he was born in a town close to it called Pinner, and his hometown football team is the Watford Hornets, and he grew up following the team and going to its stadium on Vicarage Road in Watford, and he ultimately became the president of Watford. He owned the team and became president. He's now lifetime honorary president. He's done concerts there to raise money, and he's actually risen the team as an owner. When he was an owner, he brought the team to to a championship game. They didn't win it back in 1984, but they went to the championship game. So it's been a bright spot for him. And so he had a couple of concerts there as part of his farewell tour. And they were going to be very special concerts for him. And so those, I like to go to special concerts for Elton, in addition to ones that are close to the house. But I also like to try to go to ones that have special meaning. There's no doubt that the two shows in Watford were going to be special shows, and they indeed were. And so that was more than a motivating factor to go at that time. But I don't need much of a coaxing to go to London. I just love it there. So, interestingly, you know, there's a six-hour difference in time. 6 hours there, 6 hours ahead. So, for instance, if it's noon in Chicago, it's 6 o'clock in the evening in London. And so, you know, we're on vacation, and it was about an hour's drive to get to the venue. We wanted to get there early to beat traffic because this soccer stadium, Watford is a very small town, working class town, very small, and this stadium, it's like Wrigley Field, or you know, really in that it's right in the neighborhood. You're walking down houses and you make a right turn, and all of a sudden there's the stadium across the street. Literally our houses. Just like the apartment buildings on Sheffield across the street from Wrigley. It's just like that. And so you know, we're on vacation. We're checking our emails and stuff like that, but not, you know, constantly. And so we left early to get there because there's a lot of traffic and things like that. So we really didn't check any of our texts or emails or things like that. Once we got to the venue, we met some people that we knew, and then the concert was on, and we came back. And so, interestingly, when we got back to our room at about 11:30 in the evening, my wife checked her texts finally. And now, of course, you know, as I said before, it's 11:30 in London, so it's about 5:30 p.m. here. But she had noticed a text that she had gotten earlier in the day from her brother, who lives on the East Coast. And all he said was, in this text was, I saw what happened in Highland Park. Are you okay? Well, I mean, we weren't around a phone. We weren't around a television or a radio, and we were at this concert, and we weren't checking any of our emails or our texts or anything on the phone. So we didn't know what the heck he was talking about. And he, you know, being from the East Coast, he just saw on the news that there was this tragic, horrific mass shooting in Highland Park. And he had sent the text earlier in the day, but we didn't see it until we got back to our room at 11:30 in the evening. Now, it would have probably been sent around 4 o'clock because, you know, 10 o'clock or so is when this event happened, 10 a.m. around here in Chicago. So that would be like 4 o'clock there. But as I said, we left around 4 or so to go. So we weren't really checking anything. So we were like, what? And we don't, and well, obviously we were okay. We were 4,000 miles away from Chicago at that point. So we were fine. But we didn't know what he was referring to. And I said, wow, I wonder if there was a fire or something, or what could have happened in Highland Park, especially Highland Park, Illinois, which for those of you who live in the Chicago area, you know, it's a suburb in the North Shore, and it's a pretty small and quiet area. You know, it's not a place where it's not a high crime area. It's, you know, it's an affluent area. So not a lot happens negatively in Highland Park. So we were wondering, what is he referring to? And so we still hadn't turned the TV on yet. We were in the room. And so my wife just Googled, you know, Highland Park to see. I said, well, you know, put Google Highland Park, see what's going on. And wow, were we in it for a shock? And you know, all it took was you know a couple of letters. Once she typed in "hi," boom, you know the Google thing already, you know, knew what she was looking for and took her right to stories about Highland Park. And she's like, "Wow, there was a mass shooting during the Highland Park 4th of July parade," and it was like, "Oh my gosh!" So that's why her brother was asking, because he didn't know, you know, where we were. Were we at this parade? I'm sure, or you know, especially on the East Coast, you know, the headline probably was mass shooting at a parade in Chicago, and then they drilled down as they did a more specific report. But I'm sure the headline, you know, on the news initially was near Chicago, or you know, Chicago shooting, and then of course they got into specifics about, you know, a suburb of Chicago. So I'm sure he may have just seen the headline, you know, mass shooting in Chicago. And so she got back to him and said, "Yeah, well, you know, we're fine, we're safe. In fact, we're not even in the country." So then I said, "Well, let's turn the TV on." And now we are in London, England. We are 4,000 miles away. It is 11:30 in the evening in London. London. Okay, I can't stress that enough. Let's not forget, England is an ally of the United States, one of the few democracies left in this world that we, you know. So, yeah, it should matter what London thinks about us. They are one of our friends. It's an odd friendship, right? Because we defected from them, but that was 200 and almost 50 years now, and they thankfully don't have a thick skin on that. Maybe they do, but we are allies, right? Even if it's sometimes a little rough, we are allies with England. And so on the BBC News, the British Broadcasting Company, the main news in England, the lead story on the news that evening, still at 11:30 at night when they would have, you know, the ongoing news, the lead stories. And then even the next morning, when the news came on every hour, you know, now it's the 7 o'clock news, 8 o'clock, even though the news continues at the top of the hour, it sort of restarts. The lead story, not only on July 4th, but then on July 5th, the next day, in the morning, there was the headline on the news, on the BBC, mass shooting in Chicago. And as I said before, then, as they did their reports, they talked about how it was in Highland Park, and they showed the distance of Highland Park from downtown Chicago. But the headline, so there could be a reference point, because nobody, there's people outside of Illinois that don't even know where Highland Park is. There's some people in Illinois that probably don't even know what Highland Park is. So as a reference, especially here in England, in London, they just made it Chicago because it was near Chicago. So blasting all around the world, folks. You know, this was a local story here, I'm sure, and we weren't here to see the kind of coverage that it got here, and we're still getting coverage about the Highland Park shooting weeks after, and we probably will continue for a while. I can only imagine what it was like here in the Chicago area. I'm sure there were all live broadcasts and cutting into news and things like, and cutting into programming and all, everything like that. But my point is, 4,000 miles away in England, this was a lead story. And while, yes, there was compassion and empathy and sympathy for this shooting, certainly for the victims, for those that were killed as well as injured, some very seriously, some permanently, while they reported on this story with compassion and concern and sadness, there also was a definite perspective of the gun violence in America. So they reported on the story, and they reported on it with, as I said, compassion and concern and care and empathy and sadness, which would you would expect. But when they continued to talk about the story, and as I said, this was not only the lead story, but it was a chunk of that they reported on it, and then they had a panel of people to discuss the gun violence in America, because this story certainly was another example of that. And we have become numb to this, sadly. And, you know, we are seeing people killed on a regular basis. And we saw Buffalo a few weeks ago, and right after that, Uvalde. And when Buffalo happened, we said never again. And a week later, Uvalde happened, and we said never again. And on 4th of July, Highland Park happened. And the sad part is, I don't know when the next one's going to happen. But we sadly know it's going to, and we're going to have all the same things again, all the vigils and all the calls for gun control. And we have sadly become numb to this. This is not a new phenomenon. This has been going on from Columbine and Parkland and Sandy Hook and other synagogue shootings. This has continued. And we are getting used to it. And we are getting numb to it, and we are getting outraged, but we are not changing it. And that is not being lost on the rest of the world. This is what I'm saying about the image that we are portraying and conveying to the rest of the world. If you think that other countries are looking at us with a puzzled look based on how divided we are over our politics in terms of Donald Trump and COVID and abortion and many of the issues that are dividing us today. Believe me, the gun issue in this country is in many ways more perplexing to our allies and more perplexing to countries around the world, because this really is an American problem. And by living in America, and we've become accustomed to the argument. But I have to tell you, when you're out of the country and you see how the other countries view us, this gun issue, while we are divided on many other issues, which I just mentioned to you, abortion and the way we've handled COVID and politics and Donald Trump and all this other stuff. But I have to tell you, those are all issues that are debatable. But other countries really are looking at us now, always have, but the gun problem in this country, the mass shootings as well as the weekly shootings, and here in Chicago, we certainly know about that, and we've become blasé and numb to that on a weekend now. Without fail, we are always hearing, oh, this weekend 10 people got killed and 15 people got killed. And that's a weekly occurrence now. And we are getting so used to it. That's the scariest part. But we're getting used to it. But countries around the world are looking at the same statistics we are looking at the same incidents that we are, and they are aghast. And they are looking at America and saying, what the heck has happened to the United States of America? And at one time, there was great respect for this country by countries around the world. And culturally, and aside from our political strength and our economic strength, which many times other countries had to at the very least respect because of our power and what it could do, and we could help them at times. Or if they were our enemies, they had to fear us. But more than our political and our economic strength, which certainly elevated this country, we were also respected and used as an example culturally. And I have to tell you, folks, economically and militarily, economically, we are in no great shakes now. We're still very strong militarily, no question about that. But culturally, from what I saw on the coverage in London, in England, on the BBC, on American culture, and the way that people in Britain that were on these panels, on the news, talking, there was very little respect for American culture. The language they were using, they were certainly aghast at what was happening. This mass murder that just happened, but they were more perplexed at how America can continue this and the downward spiral that culturally America was in and how it is the most dangerous country in the world. And that's what they were saying. And we're sitting around going, oh, well, that's just, who cares? Well, we can't do that anymore. There was a time 50 or 60 or 70 or 80 years ago where we could say, well, who cares what England or the United Kingdom or other countries think about us? We're the United States and screw them. We're the USA, damn it. Well, we better get off our high horse and realize that, A, our image around the country, around the world isn't respected like it used to be. And we can no longer have that kind of screw the rest of the world attitude. There was a time when countries were isolated, that their economies were based solely on what they did. But 35 or 40 some years ago, when American business really embraced, and even before that, but really it was in the 80s, late 70s or early 80s, when the American business machine began to say that they wanted to open up and become more global. And they started opening more factories around the world where they can get cheaper labor. And they were opening up new markets. They were like, hey, we've been able to dominate selling our products here in the United States, but there's markets out there that'll like these products just as well around the world. And so our economy became global. If you remember, for those of you who are old enough, there was a big thing then. And people still talk about it. Made in the USA. Made in the USA. You don't see that tag on many products anymore, do you? Well, that's because about 30, 40, or 50 years ago, there was a definite move by American business to become more global, to not only build manufacturing plants globally around the world to take advantage of lower wages, but also to open up new markets. So now we are dependent. Our economy is dependent on how other countries think about us and on other countries' economies. Because if there's a recession in Europe, for instance, or in other countries around the world, and our companies are relying on those markets, for their bottom line. If there's recessions there, then people are buying less products, and it affects the bottom lines of American companies. So, yes, the idea of going global has some upsides. You're expanding your access. You're expanding your markets. You're expanding your potential consumers. No question about that. But then you're also, on the downside, having to withstand the losses when those markets decrease. Yes, you may initially get some big upturns when you introduce your product to a new market that's never seen it before. And if it's a good product and it's proven, it'll probably do just as well somewhere else. But if there's an economic downturn, or there's maybe another product within that country that can battle yours, then you better be ready to take the hits. But we are a global society today, and if American business started the trend 50 years ago in the late 70s, and certainly in the 80s, of becoming global companies, this whole idea of a global society may have started with American business, but it came to fruition in the mid-90s, and then in the last 15 or 20 years, in the 21st century, because of the internet. Because now we are literally connected to the rest of the world. And so what happens now, the you know, it's a small world after all. Remember, when you go to Disneyland and that damn song would be plastered in your head when you went through. It's a small world, and those little dolls were singing the same song, and all those different languages. Well, right now, we are seeing that it is a small world, because news of what happens in the smallest of countries, in the smallest of cities, in the smallest of villages can get to us in a second now. We are a global society, so we need to start caring about what other countries think about us. We cannot be isolationists. It's not even a valid philosophy anymore. It can't be. You can't be an isolationist in a global society. And that's what we are now. So this whole idea of, well, who cares what other countries think about us? That is an antiquated view. And if people still have that, they're living really in the past. And that will only get us into more trouble. But I'm telling you, folks, we better do something about this divided psyche that we have in this country now, and especially, which would seem to be a very logical thing, on the gun issue. Other countries are shaking their heads at us. They cannot believe how we are allowing these mass shootings to happen on a regular basis, because we will not take the necessary steps to curtail the sale of guns. Now, I'm not getting political here on the Second Amendment or where you stand. I will be, full disclosure, I was never born, and I wasn't raised in a gun culture. I never hunted. I was surprised to see that I didn't know that my dad had a gun. And I didn't find that out until years later, after I'd moved out of the house, and he showed me this gun. I didn't know why we had a gun in our house. And when he passed away, I don't know if it was ever, and I doubt it. I mean, I don't even know where he got the gun. And when he passed away, I turned it in to the police station, because I didn't know if it was ever registered or anything. So I wasn't raised in a gun culture. But I understand the Second Amendment. I do believe that it was written at a time when a fledgling country was afraid about being invaded. I think the context of the Second Amendment is very important, and I think those who support it don't want the context to play a role, because basically the context of the Second Amendment, the way I see it, was that it was a new fledgling country that was afraid of either being recaptured by England or being invaded by another big country somewhere down the line. And so the idea was that we need to arm the civilians, because just as we decided to declare independence and revolt against England, other powerful countries in this world with major armies can come in and try to overtake us. And that happened. And so I think the Second Amendment was definitely written in the context of the realities of the time. But yes, I understand that there are people that are born and raised in a culture of guns and hunting, and it's a rite of passage and a whole father and son bonding thing. I get all that. But it does seem to be, there does seem to be some room for a little compromise, and there does seem to be some room that military-like weapons shouldn't be available to the normal person, to an 18-year-old who can't buy a legal drink but can buy a legal machine gun. This seems to be kind of common sense, and you should hear how people in other countries are viewing that. They can't believe that we're even having this debate. And they are talking about us in terms that are not very positive. And they're talking about the disintegration of the American culture. That's what they're saying, folks. We need to take a step back. We need to take a look in the mirror. So many of these divisive issues are not only dividing us internally, but they are sending a horrible message to the rest of the world about who we are and where we're going as a country, as a world power, and as a culture. And our culture was always respected, and it is decreasingly being less, or it is increasingly being less respected every time one of these mass shootings happens. I still believe that America is the greatest country on this planet. No question about it. And we deserve credit because we do air our dirty laundry. And we do try to work out our differences in the public square as opposed to behind closed doors. That is admirable, and that is something that we should be proud of. But there was a time when we were willing to compromise. And that is gone. And that is going to be not only a major obstacle in America moving forward, but it also could be a major stumbling block in America declining. We are seeing it internally, the division. We are seeing it and feeling it internally. But I'm telling you, I saw it from the outside and not from our enemies. This wasn't on Russian television talking about America in very disrespectful terms and being aghast at how American culture has declined and allowing guns and violence to rule its culture. This wasn't propaganda from Russian television. This wasn't propaganda from Chinese television. This was on television from one of our allies. perhaps our greatest ally in democracy in the world, England. And they're looking at us and they're shaking their heads saying, what has happened to America? And worse, they're saying they don't think it could ever get fixed. They're basically kind of just washing their hands and saying they're never going to learn. And we once were this shiny city on a hill. We once were this example for the rest of the world to look to and to aspire to. And now even our allies are looking the other way. They're not looking up to us. They're not looking to us or up to us. They're actually speaking about us in very bad terms. And we should care about it. You can't just say, well, who cares? You better care, because we need all the allies we can in this world. And as I said before, we're a global society. It's impossible to be isolationists anymore. But don't we want to be the shining example for the rest of the world? Don't we want that? Do we want to be an also-ran, or do we want to be a leader? Do we want to be the example that other countries aspire to? We used to be that. So not only for our own pride and respect, not only for our own ability to feel good about who we are and what we are as a country, this divisiveness is killing that. But it's also destroying our reputation and our respect around the world, and we will need that because our enemies will seize on it. We have enemies out there, folks. We really do. And as I said to you before, they're playing the long game. They're just waiting us out. So we better take a good look in the mirror and see who we are and what we're doing and how we can get better. Because what we're doing right now, we know it's not good for us internally. And I just saw it firsthand. It's not doing us any favors around the world either. It's time for a wake-up call, folks. We need to come together. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion is much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 321. I'm Jim Tarano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screens.